I'm Rachel Ferris, and this is Social Flubs. And I have here the women of PR Soup. It's a very popular PR blog. You should check it out. Here is Luann Glowax. She is currently the communications manager for Ballet Austin. And I have Andrea Schuele. She's president of As Such Communications. And then finally, we have Christine Cox, and she is president of Christine Cox PR. And I work for a startup company here in Austin called PetRelocation.com. So basically, we just want to let you know ahead of time, if you haven't figured it out already, that our hashtag is SXFlubs, not sex flubs, because that would be awkward.
Just, and a flub.
I think we've all had one, but let's keep it G-rated. So anyway, SXFlubs is the hashtag. And if you have any questions during this panel or anything like that, feel free to tweet on that hashtag, and we'll try to get to your questions at some point in this session, if at all. So obviously, I mean, social media at this point, we all know it can be very beneficial to a marketing or PR strategy. But a lot of companies are still really hesitating to kind of embrace it. So we wanted to kind of start off just today by talking about, we've pinned quite a few kind of infographics and just visual aids for this presentation. So we wanted to look at a recent infographic from a poll done by Penton Marketing Service. So if you could just raise your hand if any of these apply to you so we can get a feel for where you're at. As to why companies are kind of not wanting to develop a social media strategy, or why they're not wanting to kind of get more involved with social media. So 37% of companies say that there's not enough time to dedicate to it. So who feels like that might be the case for them? Anyone? I thought you were going to raise your hand.
I was going to raise my hand.
Okay, and so 35% don't think it is critical for their business. Anyone feel that way?
Actually, I have a client who feels that way.
Okay.
So I'm struggling to educate. Persuade them. Educate is a better word elsewhere.
All right. 26% say lack of resources as the issue.
That's,
I'm guessing you work for a nonprofit if you're raising your hand right now.
I do.
26% have a difficult time measuring it. They don't know its effectiveness, or they're not sure if it would be valuable to them. 19% are uncertain about how to even get started. And then 13% are just concerned about customer privacy issues. Anyone else that might relate to them? All right. So basically, you know, we're still kind of struggling with whether or not we should really begin using social media. And we wanted to kind of make people feel empowered to not only start using it, but have the tools and the ideas of what happens if it goes wrong. Say you dip your toe into the social media oceans, and I don't know, your boat, your cruise liner happens to crash into an island offshore. So the very first instance we're going to be talking about today is the recent tragedy, really, off the coast of Italy that Carnival Cruise Lines had. Luann, would you like to just talk about kind of their response to their ship crashing and kind of what happened?
Sure. I mean, I think that that this is a good case study for all of us, even if you're from a small organization like I am. There's a lot of good things to learn. I think they did some things right, even though they're getting a lot of grief about it. So Carnival is the parent of Costa Cruise Line, so that's the connection there. And they got socially blasted because they happen to be sophisticated and online socially. So they were basically had the forum for people, so that's where people went to talk about the tragedy. I mean, their social presence is actually pretty robust. But it's all about fun in the sun, right? It's very marketing. It's very fun. They even have their own custom platform called Funville, and so it's very sophisticated. Something more than a lot of us could actually afford to do. But it has a very specific purpose. And when the tragedy struck on January 13th, on the day of the boat tragedy, it was an easy target and an easy sounding board for everyone. And so I thought it was fascinating the kind of process that they went through. It was like a grieving process for a social media manager. And I think it was pretty typical of what you will see. I mean, first, it was silence. They were tweeting about all these fun, wonderful things, and then all of a sudden, silence. while they were regrouping, and then some condolence. And I think I have a, you know, you have it up there. So the condolence messages came up out of respect for everyone involved. You know, we just want to send out our good thoughts and prayers to everyone. And then it turned to help and resources. They spent some time refreshing people on their on the safety of cruise ships and really keeping fears at bay, for lack of a better term. I just came up with that, guys.
Yeah,
I know. Thank you. I didn't even have a cookie.
We really like puns, and we're trying to keep them to a minimum.
I really hate them, actually, so I apologize for that. So that they turned to helping. And people who are going to be going on cruises were really voicing a lot of concerns. And so it turned to that. And then, interesting enough, they went back to silence. And they announced their silence out of respect for everything that's happening. We are going to have a few days of silence. And they did. I thought that was pretty interesting. And then they resumed to business as usual. I think that it was actually a pretty... respectable process that they went through. And of course, a lot of people really wanted to blast them for it. There were a lot of people in the cruise line industry that blogged about it, about how terribly they handled it. And to be fair, silence is deafening. And I think that's what scares people is and turns people off, in that they should have been saying something. They should have said something immediately. But in this case, it was not the appropriate channel, I think. That the channel was all about marketing messages and fun. So I, being the traditional PR person I am, can imagine what was happening during that silence. They weren't just sitting dumbfounded. I can imagine they were going through quite a bit of already put in place processes up and down the food chain and across customer service and sales and things like that. How are we going to respond to this appropriately? So I got to give them a lot of credit myself. So.
Well, and so, I mean, they work in an industry that is about fun, but then there's also the issue of what happens if. Obviously, it's a very emotional type situation when tragedies do strike. So what could they have done differently in terms of their channels in which to communicate this?
Well, you know, it, and I know that we had talked about this a few days ago, and everybody got really mad at me because I made the comment of, well, you can't always know what's going to be happening to your organization. And everyone just kind of got, you know,
we're like, okay, wait, you have boats and you sail.
Yes.
You're in the ocean and there's boats.
Yeah.
I don't know. Put it together.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Titanic?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. So, you mean you're a cruise line. You got to know, and you have to have dealt with mass sickness before, you know, there's pirates out there now and everything. It's pretty crazy. So I can imagine. I don't know what they have in place. I'm not going to judge them. I'm guessing that they have a pretty sophisticated way to deal with this. And I want to dispel a rumor that I heard that they had given out 30% discount coupons to the victims involved. Did you guys hear
that?
I
heard that.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone hear that? So I looked that up, and I just did that this morning to make sure that that was not true. And thankfully, Time Magazine dispelled that immediately afterwards, that they did not give 30% off coupons to the victims. What they did, from what I can discern, is that they tried to give coupons to people who were going to be on future Costa cruise ships that were afraid of getting back on. So... hardly better, but
not much.
I mean, I had to clear that up a little bit, that they did not do that. I think the lesson to learn here, whether they have this in place or not, is to make sure that you have that crisis communication plan in place. It's a very classic PR strategy to have, but to extend that to your social is absolutely imperative. I think that even though social has been around a long time and a lot of organizations do now have social media managers and people dedicated to digital engagement, that it's still in its infancy. And a lot of organizations, some that I could name by name that I know of, do not have those processes in place like they do for the PR department. Before you release information, you need to go through these channels. You need to get approval and things like that. there's a lot of social media managers out there who are flying blindly and maybe responding inappropriately to
maybe
things that are happening.
Too much rope. Too much freedom.
A little bit. I'm not saying that that's what happened in this case, because it looks like with the silence, I'm guessing that's what happened, is that they went through appropriate approval channels. But
I recently found an interesting statistic that 76, and this was just released, I think, what did I say, like 2 days ago on Mashable, that 76% of companies want a social media plan in place. However, only 24% of companies have a social media plan in place. And of those 24% that have a social media plan in place, only 22% of the companies are training their employees on that plan. That's pretty shocking. Mm-hmm. Spoken from the PR perspective. That's very shocking. So it does tell you, you need to have your ducks in a row and understand what to do when something like this happens.
Well, and so, Andrea, when something like this happens, when it's an issue maybe not as tragic as a cruise liner running ashore, but a customer service issue, how should you respond in a social media atmosphere to customer service issues?
Sure. So that was a great segue, Rachel. I'm going to talk about two cases of customer service issues that, quite frankly, we would have never, ever heard about if it wasn't for social media. So I'm going to be discussing when the flub actually occurs because of social media. So I think we all remember Papa John's, am I right? Everybody in this room remembers. It wasn't that long ago. Just to refresh quickly, there was a Papa John's store in New York. The lady in the corner, her name is Minchi Ho, came in, ordered her pizza. The, 19, 20-year-old person at the cash register decided that instead of using an appropriate descriptor for her, put that rather derogatory term up there, right? So I think we can all read it. So she got her pizza, got her receipt, looked at it, and then promptly threw that up on Twitter. Of course, rather shocked that she was described that way. Within 3 hours of posting that image up on Twitter, she had over 25,000 views of that receipt. That's a ton. 25,000 views in 3 hours. It took Papa John's 6 hours to reply. Six. In social media time, that's
a lifetime.
That's a lifetime. That's an eon, right? When Papa John's did respond, they decided just to do a really generic response, and it read, "We are very upset by recent receipt issue in New York and sincerely apologize to our customer. Franchise employee involved is being terminated." So, I mean, that's my response. My response is so. And also, to kind of compound this issue, there was another Papa John's employee who tweeted, I'm not sure if it was tweet or Facebook post, because this is too many words for a tweet. Said, "I think the lady put it out there just to get some attention. Some people like that type of attention. I truly don't think it's fair. It's been taking up all of our time, and it's been disruptive."
Did that person get fired?
No.
Well, they should have. Do you have their number?
No. So Papa John's never actually responded to that issue. They stuck to their really generic form of apology. They did nothing else to tell anybody how they were going to resolve this issue. Or, "We've reached out, I hate to use the term victim, but we reached out to Minchi." Or they never really said anything. They didn't say, we are going to go ahead and use this as a training tool to ensure that this doesn't keep happening. And this is something that has been trending, unfortunately, in the restaurant world. There was an issue at Chick-fil-A not too long ago as well.
They've had several issues.
Right, exactly. So what did Papa John's do right? They used the same channel. They went ahead and released their apology in Twitter. But short of that, many people, and I believe, that they didn't do much else. They used a canned response when replying to anybody else who replied to the at Papa John's Twitter handle. They just used the same response over and over. And they were just doing at replies. They weren't trying to do any DMs. They weren't taking any time with this to tell people, we're sorry, this person messed up, he's gone, this is not the Papa John's culture. They didn't do any of that. And then again, they didn't really personally apologize to Min Chi Ho, and I feel bad for her for that. That is Papa John.
She should have gotten a year's worth of pizza.
Although better pizza.
Although better pizza. Yeah, their pizza isn't good. Like, they could have given her a year's worth of Domino's pizza or
right.
something.
And then a, yeah. a coupon for Lipitor. Or something.
Yeah, yeah, up, right. Okay. No, a gym membership.
That would have been good.
So that's Papa John's.
What about an example of a company maybe that got it right when it came to customer service via social media?
Sure. So let's take a look at FedEx. And I think Rachel's going to pull up a quick little video here. Did everybody see this video of the FedEx guy throwing the monitor over the gate? It's really short. Oh, and there's no audio because it was a home security camera.
Dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Boom.
Boom.
Looks good to him.
Cut air. Yeah.
I delivered it. I'm going to move on
and
now.
And he doesn't even look back.
No, he doesn't even look back.
Awesome.
So, needless to say, the home security video got posted up on YouTube. And within a couple of days, it had like 2 million hits on YouTube. They got 17,000 comments about this, from anything from total disgust to, oh, I've had that happen to me too. So FedEx really took this to heart, and they invoked their SVP of operations to release an apology. So first of all, they put out a video. They, I think Rachel has a picture of, his name is Matthew Thornton. So they put a video that he did, and granted, he's a little stiff. I'll admit to that. It's not the, oh, that's a horrible shot.
He actually fell asleep during his response.
No. Because I'm praising him.
Okay, okay, there. Much better.
Thank you. So, you know, this is a man who...
He didn't really fall.
He didn't. It's
I did, but...
Rachel did.
Anyway, so he does look a little stiff, and I'll admit that. And if you watch the video, it sounds rehearsed, and that's because it was. This is not a person who's used to being in front of a camera. They did not go get the FedEx CEO or, you know, the person who's used to being their soundbite person. They went and got the person who is in charge of operations. And he came on and did a very sincere, I thought, like, again, albeit a little rehearsed, but sincere apology that basically said, we are sincerely, actually I have the text here, it says, as the leader of our pickup and delivery operations across America, I want you to know that I was upset, embarrassed, and very sorry for our customers' poor experience. This goes directly against everything we have always taught our people and expect of them. It was just very disappointing. Sounds a little bit better than Papa John's,
really,
right?
Honest, yeah.
You know,
right.
I really like the fact. I mean, at first, I think your instinct is to maybe go to the top of the company and try to go from mm-hmm. there. But I do. I mean, it seems more sincere coming from the head of that division. That deals
right, because you'd be the one directly in charge of the delivery drivers and the procedures and processes that they have to follow. He also in no way said, oh, it really wasn't that big of a deal. We don't care. It's just a computer monitor. We'll replace it. I mean, they were very sincere with their apology. They went in the channel. They went straight to the channel that the flub occurred in, so they went straight to YouTube. He also wrote a really nice blog post that they put up on the FedEx site. And so they handled it really well. The other thing that they did that I really praise, they went ahead and put this video into their normal training practices. So now this is being incorporated as a lesson for their drivers to learn from. And they publicly stated that, too. So not only are they apologizing, they're using this as a training lesson. And I will say they also went to the customer straight away, sat with them face-to-face, and personally delivered a new monitor. So they kind of went above and beyond, I think, for their response.
And I think several times now you've said that they responded in the same channel.
In the same channel.
And I think that's a really, really important consideration. And it's something that you may not think about in the moment, you know, as people are inherently good. And if you feel like you need to apologize for something, sometimes you go overboard and maybe go beyond mm-hmm. the scope of what it was. And I think it's important to reiterate that these people responded in the channel in which this flub occurred to reach those people that were affected and not open it up to, I mean, and that sounds kind of weird, but not open it up to a broader audience than it
didn't have to go any further than it needed.
But what about in the example of the Papa John's instance, so first it was just people that were on Twitter that were kind of finding out about it, but it ended up becoming a national story. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to one of my coworkers today about this panel, and I was telling her about the examples we were going to use, and she said, well, did Papa John's ever actually do anything about that? She never found out about the tweet because she wasn't on Twitter. So she doesn't keep up with what's going on Twitter. But what could they have done differently in terms of how do you apologize to people that that weren't affected on Twitter without making it a bigger story than it needs to be? That's where the sticking point comes in.
And that's really a delicate balance. I can say Papa John's also went to FedEx. Obviously, their FedEx board went crazy, but it was the exact same canned speech. I think you can take it overboard as well. I mean, this was a simple customer service issue. This wasn't an issue where a cruise ship crashed and we had loss of life. And it's not going to be like the issue that Christine discusses, which is a lot more grave. So I actually think their response was perfect, Rachel. I would not have called a press conference or put an ad out in the paper for something like of this magnitude. That's my opinion. Not.
I think I would have done a YouTube video like the FedEx guy did. I mean, I think they should have done that.
For Papa John's?
Mm-hmm. Papa John's? Might not have been a bad idea.
What would the tone of that video have been? Would it have been this is a quality control issue, and I think having kind of that stuffy kind of feel is okay. But how would you have dealt with the Papa John's video? Like, what would the tone and the theme of it have been?
You know what I would have done, Rachel? I actually would have approached this completely differently from Papa John's and said, we are not a racist company.
Yeah, you need to talk about your culture.
I mean, honestly, exactly. That was the issue with Papa John's. They called her Lady Chinky Eyes.
And maybe
it's awful.
Even discuss the demographics of the people that you serve, as well as the people who work for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, take it, to make it more personal so that, you know, this looks like an isolated incident that would never happen under normal circumstances.
Right. And I think
even though it isn't, like you said, earth-shattering you know, it's not nobody died or anything, it's still a very sensitive topic.
Mm-hmm. Right, I agree, it's sensitive. And I, like I said, to me, that their apology was just water under the bridge.
Lame.
It was lame. That's a great word for it. And they really should have explained their corporate culture better and that they do not tolerate racist comments or any kind of disparaging comments whatsoever. And perhaps a blog post would have been a great idea if they have an active blog. I don't know all of the social channels that Papa John's engages in. I can honestly tell you I don't eat Papa John's pizza. So if they're active with their blog, that could have been another good thing. They also could have done something even a step further, perhaps, and donate it to a charity or something to show they're behind a cause. I mean, we might be taking it a little too far,
And I think the point is, once it goes viral like this, you need to respond.
Right.
I mean, it's everywhere already. But, I mean, for those of us who are at smaller organizations, I mean, thinking, you know, from someone who works at the ballet, when there's a problem with the, you know, purchasing tickets online, or there's something wrong with our phone system, to broadcast it on Twitter and Facebook that, we've got problems with our phones right now, everybody. I mean, it's not necessarily the best idea, but like you said, once it's viral and you're a huge company, it's out there.
Well, one thing I think with the FedEx, not only did they respond to the problem, but they addressed it in a way that prevents future issues. The whole aspect of using this as a training tool. I think that Papa John's could have done something like that, maybe a diversity training or some kind of seminars that they
Absolutely.
Publicize that they're doing that. So they're not really perpetuating the oops that they made, but they are actually, getting the word out that they're doing this kind of diversity training. That way, if someone didn't know about it, maybe they never heard about the problem, they would be like, oh, how great, Papa John's is, embracing diversity. And it would come off as a positive to them.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Excellent.
Let's hire Rachel. You're hired.
How much you paying?
That's the problem.
All right.
That is hilarious.
Okay, so I guess we're going to move on to kind of our last case study here. We're going to be talking about the recent controversy between Komen and Planned Parenthood. Is everyone pretty familiar with it? Where are we at with that? Raise your hand if you haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with it.
All right, so we have one person. It's your lucky day. We have an expert here in the crowd.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Christine loves to get on her soapbox about this. So, Christine, go ahead and tell us about kind of how this controversy started and what role social media played in exposing it.
Well, what happened was Susan G. Komen Foundation, they've done so much great work. Everybody knows about all the good things that they've done. But there was a representative in Florida who is a Republican who began looking into various Planned Parenthood chapters in Florida and then wanted to take it to, you know, all over the country to see what they were. He wanted to investigate what their funds were being used for. In other words, what the Planned Parenthood funding was doing according to what the Komen funding, what they were giving them. And it was mainly because he was pro-life and he wanted to make sure that none of the funding coming from the government to help Planned Parenthood or any other funders was being used for abortions. And he went to Komen and said that, you know, and put some pressure on the people at Komen, saying that there would be a government investigation. He was going to start trying to investigate some of these the Planned Parenthood chapters, and that if, you know, they continue to fund give funding to Planned Parenthood, he was going to start some sort of government investigation, like some kind of, I don't even know how to explain it.
Because no one does.
Well, because he didn't have, because he didn't really have that much power, which is what's so interesting, because the reaction by Komen was sort of disproportionate to what he could have possibly done anyway. And Komen was only giving Planned Parenthood $700,000, a little bit over $700,000 a year to help them pay for mammograms for, you know, poor women in various chapters across the country. So they decided that they would pull the funding starting in 2013. They were going to continue it this year, but then in the next fiscal year they would pull the grant funding for Planned Parenthood. Well, someone at Planned Parenthood tweeted that, and that's all it took was one tweet, and social media went bonkers. It was immediately on Facebook. It was, you know, people started immediately organizing demonstrations. They were standing outside of Planned Parenthood chapters. There's lots of, we have some of the, like that, that's an example of one. And Komen did nothing. They sat quietly for almost 3 days. And in the meantime, the backlash was crazy, and it was all over the news, and the press was trying to get Komen to make a statement, and they were refusing statements. So finally, after day three, so the Twitter post went out on January 31st, and on February 3rd, I guess Komen was in the meantime preparing an answer, and they had Nancy Brinker, who is the CEO and founder. Her sister died of breast cancer many years ago, and so she founded this organization. And they had her do a video, and you know, to explain why they had pulled this funding, and I basically added insult to injury because it was very stiff. It was seen as sort of elitist. She used phrases like, we want to make sure the right people get mammogram screenings. Just everything from the phraseology to the severe hairdo to the really expensive looking room that she was in. I mean,
I'm sorry to my liberal friends, but she looks like Nancy Pelosi up there.
And if that's a bad thing, because?
Yeah, why is that bad?
She's rather severe herself.
No. Well, and I don't even get me started on severe women's. Let's just move on.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm a fan of mean women.
I like her hair.
I like mean women, and I like strong women. But in this video, she doesn't come across as connected to her audience. She doesn't come across as connected to women. She comes across speaking in a very corporate speak manner and uses a lot of phraseology that comes from a corporate culture. And when you're talking about an emotional issue, you need to be emotional. And mm-hmm. cancer couldn't be any more emotional. And mm-hmm. had she perhaps talked about her sister, she mentions her, but very briefly. She doesn't talk at all about all the women that they've helped. She made one sentence saying how many women are helped by breast cancer screenings from Komen every year. And that's fine, but there were no personal stories. She didn't talk about anything that engaged her audience or made them feel empathic and made them understand. And she doesn't explain why they pull the funding. All she says is that Planned Parenthood is under investigation, which is very sort of blaming. And in all actuality, the only thing they were under investigation for is whether they use some of their money for abortions. And we know that about 3% of Planned Parenthood's funding goes for terminating pregnancies. The thing about Planned Parenthood is they have done such a great job in the past couple of years, and they're continuing to do it, of educating the public about what exactly they do. Because for years we thought all they do is give kids, you know, give people contraception and do abortions. And, oh, my God, they do so, so, so much more. And they've done a really good job over the past few years educating people about that. So this, the timing of this was also really bad because of that. And women are starting. So there were chapters all over the country that stood, that, you know, spoke vocally that they were against what Susan G. Komen did. And
Komen
they were not
chapters?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Komen chapters were against what Komen was doing, and they didn't believe in it. Like the Jenny, I think I have a the Decemberists. It's the one with the little accordion on it. It's a T-shirt, yeah. So the Decemberists are real involved in breast cancer screening because one of the wives in the group and the female singer in the group have all been affected by it. So they've gotten involved. In the Portland chapter spoke very loudly about how upsetting it was to them. So she made this T-shirt, and she was still saying, we're standing by Komen, but we do not agree with Komen. And that was happening all over the country as well. So
one thing I really intrigued me about this was Planned Parenthood is out there. I mean, they're definitely very active on social media networks, and they're tweeting every day. What was it about this one tweet that they sent out on this one issue that turned it into such a firestorm?
I think it was very much a women against women sort of thing. I think that once it caught fire and people started realizing that, an organization that's supposed to be helping women and dealing with women's health, which is also such a hot topic these days, you know, the healthcare issue is such a hot topic, that once people knew that these two organizations that are supposed to be doing similar things and their missions are supposed to be somewhat similar in a lot of ways, were going to be, you know, that all of a sudden Planned Parenthood, I mean, Komen wasn't going to support that. And people saw it as a political move. They felt like Komen was doing it strictly for politics. And in the end, I mean, in the beginning, I was staying very open to it and thinking, okay, well, maybe it wasn't politics. Maybe, like Luann thought, well, I heard maybe they were cooking the books over at Planned Parenthood, or I heard this. And, you know, they started all of these rumors, but none of those were really true. Had it been that, I might have been also like, oh, well, then I kind of get it, you know. But it wasn't. It was purely political. So
I guess what kind of lessons are to be learned from that with regard to, making these issues public, and also how do you come back from that? How can Komen come back from a political issue and say, you know what, we still care about women? What should be their next steps, especially in terms of social media? What should they do?
Well, they lost a lot of their corporate sponsors. They were the corporate sponsors like Yoplait. I think there's a visual up here. Was pressured by their consumers to pull their funding. You know, there's many, many people involved in the pink ribbon escapade, lots and lots of corporations who are involved. And many of those corporations have since pulled their support of Komen because of this. Planned Parenthood, it's interesting because one man's PR nightmare becomes another man's PR
gain.
Bingo, yeah. And I mean, Planned Parenthood has already received well over $1 million worth of donations since this happened a month ago, and I think the money's just pouring in. So I think that Komen has a lot of work to do. They still have a lot of support, and they still do a lot of good work, but they've come under a lot of fire lately, not just because of this, but before this, they had already been looked at for several other things that, you know, were upsetting to their donors. And so one of them being that way too much of their money goes back into the organization and doesn't go to the women that need it. So I think that the only thing they can do now, like if it were me, I would be – now, first of all, it's weird to me that they didn't have someone as big as that organization is manning their social media very, very carefully all day long. And the minute they saw this happen, instead of going silent, that they wouldn't have been managing it. So – I think that that's a lesson for everybody to learn, is that if you are going to be a part of social media, you can't, if something negative happens, you can't just ignore it. I mean, and there are companies, I know a large company, and a friend of mine runs their social media internationally, who a couple of years ago, and I don't know if this is still their policy, said if anything negative comes up on our page on Facebook or Twitter, we ignore it. And this is a billion-dollar company. And she is the international social media manager.
That's crazy.
Now, I don't know if I asked her today if that were true, because we've all learned so much in the past couple of years about social media. But Komen's silence for 2.5, almost 3 days was...
Killed him.
It killed him. It was really, really bad decision.
So I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I personally find it amazing that Komen didn't have a clear plan to announce these cuts
in
funding. Oops, I'm going to have some discourse here, which is great.
We love it.
We love discourse up here. I'm surprised that there wasn't a communication policy in advance that says we are going to cut these grants. Now, I realize, my dad grew up in the grant world. His work revolved around getting money, even though he's a biochemist, and even though sometimes his findings totally went against what his grant money was supposed to be, you know, supporting. So I understand his need for grants, and I understand
it's tricky.
And so I understand the grant
process,
approval process, review process, all that. You don't always get your money back. And so I know for Komen, it's a natural thing, or I at least would hope it's a natural thing for them to go through an annual grant review process.
Sure.
But I would think that they would have a plan in place to communicate those cuts, especially for an organization as large as Planned Parenthood. That's just my two cents.
I agree with you in the end.
Yay!
I do. But yeah, I mean, I was as someone who works for a nonprofit and knowing the grant process, that the scenario I work out in my head is I always kind of empathize towards the corporation. I just do. I feel for the people who are scrambling to make things right.
That's sweet of you, Luana.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
But,
corporations are people, too.
They are.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, that person who is working on the grants, who it just becomes second nature to them. They're kind of in that back office with the approve, disapprove, and the right hand's not talking to the left hand, and the PR people are not involved like they should be, perhaps. I agree that they should have a process in place, but it doesn't surprise me that they kind of
the elephant in the room here is that this wasn't legit. That's the elephant in the room. This wasn't a legitimate reason to pull funding. Now,
that can be debated all day.
If Susan G. Komen wants to be upfront about the fact that they're a conservative organization and they will only fund health organizations that agree with their ideology, they are more than welcome to do that. I mean, it's a free country. They can do that. But they tried to do this under the table. They tried to sneak it in. And that's where they got hurt. And today, they still could come back right now. Nancy Brinker could come out and have a press conference and say, we've talked to our board, blah, 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 blah. We have decided that now we are only going to fund organizations whose ideology we stand by. We have this culture, and admit to your culture. But they had three people quit because once Komen came out later and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and let you keep your funding for a year, they're not promising anything beyond 2014, but once they did that, they had three people at the top quit because they didn't want to stand by Komen anymore because they want Planned Parenthood's funding yanked. So it's a very clear scenario to me that they are comfortable being a conservative ideological organization, and that's okay if that's what they want to do, but they need to be upfront about it.
And that's probably why that video comes across as so harsh and severe.
Exactly. Because she doesn't believe it.
Yeah, it's not so much her physical appearance, but the fact that it's the culture from the top down is not matching what they're saying.
Exactly.
And so they've made a choice as an organization to hire these people to make these decisions. Whether or not they're informing their social media people about it becomes secondhand. If they're deciding these things just unilaterally and saying, okay, we don't want to support these organizations anymore, then nothing that the social media person does is going to come across
as sincere.
Change
it.
And I think that's where, the voice of the social media person really does have to match the organization. And if you make giant flaws in your organization, like changing the mission or, just getting rid of your support for these people that you've supported for so long, then you're going to have these kinds of problems. We were talking about this kind of, how it's difficult for the social media person, I guess actually more for the traditional person, having to go through all these channels in order to get permission, whereas a social media person could just throw out whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that, because I wanted to make sure we discussed kind of how someone online can just kind of fly under the radar, and a lot of times things that are just being decided at the top aren't what's being said on social networks.
Yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be a very healthy balance. I don't think that we have in our corporate culture right now a healthy balance of thinking before you speak. The traditional public relations process has gotten so overmanaged, I feel, that the reason we were talking about this is I was complaining the other day. It's sad that I already just divulged who I work for, but so I'll try to be nice. But I was complaining the other day because in my marketing team, it's me, the communications manager, who works primarily with the press, and then we also have a digital media manager who works primarily in social. And I complained to her the other day because we had an announcement to make, and I asked her, or I had mentioned, it's all going to be ready in a few hours, and she said, I already released it online.
Oops.
So my answer is, how come you get to just say whatever you want? And I have to go through like 20 people to say one statement, and it's nothing bad about my
colleague,
employee, or my employer, but I think it's the corporate culture is that we've gotten so PR has now been accepted and ingrained, and we all have these processes. Social media still is in its infancy, and I think there needs to be some sort of a convergence and healthy balance of needing approval to speak on behalf of the company. Mm-hmm. I'm a big advocate of that. I'm a PR person. I work with spokespeople all the time. I have very designated spokespeople for certain things. However, we are now living in a real-time world, and the processes that we have put in place for approval channels don't work in our real-time world. So we need to somehow find a good balance. I don't think we found it.
So that's where I think the need to respond quickly in social media is clouding this whole case, right? Because we feel this urgency. Oh my gosh, it's happening on Twitter. Got to do it. And sometimes you do need it. I think that's where Luann was right with Carnival Cruise. They need it to take that time to kind of step back and pause and breathe. before just throwing something out there, I also think that they were doing a grievance period. So it was like taking that moment of silence, right? So I think that's where social media, that's where we're running kind of into that wall, is that you feel this urgency to respond, and I can just put it out there. So might have been why her colleague did that. But I'll go back to, so actually I have 2 points on this. So I'll go back to, you need to have a plan. You need to have a communications plan. Not only do you need to have a crisis communications plan, you need a communications plan. And then with that in mind, you need to make sure that all your communications channels are in line, that you don't have, and this is my, I'm always on this freaking soapbox about having integrated communications channels. You don't want silos of information. So you don't need to be saying something over here in social media, having a completely different message over here in PR. And then, oh my God, you've got advertising over here. And there's just all kinds of stuff, right? You need to make sure that your voice is the same across all those channels, that your messages come across all those channels. I mean, there's a lot more to it. I understand you've got demographics and blah, 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 different messages for all that. But those messages should be consistent, and one should not be trumping the other.
Good point.
In my opinion.
Do y'all hear that new buzzword? Transmedia.
Transmedia.
This is like the first time I've ever heard that word. I know, but that's like, I think we figured it out.
I'm going to make that my blog post.
It's whatever you say it is.
I will write a blog post on that for PR Soup next week. So if you'll go to prsoup.com.
Stand by.
Well, reaching people in all the different channels they're in, you know, which is what we've all been trying to do for a few years now, you know, like, you know, trying to reach
Bravo was perfect.
Yeah, Bravo was talking about this. We went to that to see Tom Colicchio because we have crushes on him. But
I got to touch him.
Yes, she did.
TMI. No. It's Tom.
But they talked a lot about this, about what they did with Top Chef this year, in having not only the traditional show, but then also the, what's it called?
Last Chance Kitchen
online only, and then integrating all the social media.
And then they have their viewer's choice poll as well. And then they did something with Housewives. I don't watch any of the Housewives. I'm very proud to say that. But they were talking about how they also had a contest, some sort of online contest with the Housewives.
So
that
working
the viewer,
with trans.
Right. And then it integrated in with the show. And so it's crossing all those channels. But crossing all those channels, they were very consistent in all their messaging. They're very smart how they do their work. I was very impressed with Bravo.
All right. If you guys have questions, make sure you get them in on that hashtag. We're going to wrap up with those. I just want to ask Christine one more question, kind of give her the last word on Planned Parenthood. Do you think
the heat is on.
Do you think Komen will ever recover from this?
I think they probably will. I think they're going to have to do a lot of things differently, though. I think that sometimes dramatic things like this that happen within the culture of a company, you have to go through a period where things get worse and you're stressed out and it's weird, but you have to address some things. You know, it's a changing world, and Komen was working from a 5-year-old plan. I mean, it's obvious that they were not keeping up with the mood of the country, of the way that things are changing, the way that things are changing in a fundraising capacity, politically, the healthcare issue. I mean, they need to be addressing a lot of issues. And so, I mean, my personal advice to Komen would be to own your conservative position. If that is really what you're about and you really believe, you know, if you are truly pro-life, if you truly have some sort of mission that embraces only a certain culture, then you need to just own it and quit trying to be everything to everyone. And you may not be able to paper everything in pink now. I mean, you're probably going to lose a lot of supporters. But be who you are, be honest, and, you know, I think they can come back. But I think it's going to take them a while, and I don't know that they'll ever be as big as they were. And I think that there's been a lot of they're under a magnifying glass now in all kinds of ways, and they're going to have to live up to it.
I think they need to go back to what they started with or on. I think a lot of people feel that Komen has gotten too big for their britches.
Yeah. And well, and they acted like they were too
big. Sure did. Yeah. And a lot of people feel that they're really not about breast cancer anymore, even though that's what they say that they are about. So it's like, go back to where your core and what you started with. But that being said, we had an interesting discussion yesterday that in my opinion, one of the interesting things about the Komen thing is a lot of people with family who have had breast cancer in their family or breast cancer survivors, there is not a larger mouthpiece for the cause. So it is the only...
Yeah, they have raised awareness. There's no doubt, you know, you have to give them credit for the fact that they've really raised awareness.
So they don't have... I guess what I'm saying is people don't have another mouthpiece to turn to.
But there are many other breast cancer organizations. Right. And the other organizations maybe need to, you know, take this as an example and start, you know, kick it up a notch.
Right. Right. Exactly. So there are other resources, but there isn't one as large. So if somebody really wants to get their message across, that is the largest resource right now. So, I think that is an interesting point.
Great. Okay. Well, we're going to open it up to some questions. I think before we wrap up here, we have one very interesting one from Ken Coons. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Where's our Marine?
All right. He asks, what about some of the recent military flubs? Do you agree or disagree with how they have been handled? Are you talking about like OPSEC type stuff or what are you referring to?
Can you come up to the mic? We'll shine a spotlight on you.
It's just kind of interesting. Is I'm kind of a crisis communications manager as well as a social media. And I kind of do it all. But just how they've managed the one that happened, 2 days ago?
Oh, okay.
The Marines urinating on the bodies, the Quran burning, and how, you know, just kind of interesting to get your perspective on how you think we've handled it. I mean, as a Marine, our brand is pretty strong, and when our guys do stupid stuff, kids join the Marine Corps because we're stupid and they think we're crazy, and that's why they join anyway. So it kind of actually doesn't hurt us sometimes in a way, but we still, you know, try to protect our brand and who we are because, you know, funding and everything in Congress and all the politics kind of hurt us as well.
Well, you certainly don't want anybody showing a lack of respect either, so I have to admit ignorance to that one. I have been in a South by vacuum for the past...
I'd be happy to tackle it.
Go ahead, Rachel.
You know, I think it's really interesting that you bring it up because... obviously, you're not just dealing with Americans. You're dealing with the butterfly effect of what. How does that affect the security of people overseas and in Afghanistan? I know the burnings thing ended up in a bunch of deaths, civilian deaths, and then also I think some
about six
servicemen.
Service
also,
you didn't hear about the one 2 days ago?
No. Oh yeah, I heard about that one too. You know, I think I've been kind of watching the responses and. It's difficult. I mean, I wouldn't want your job. That's. Let me start with that.
Go ahead, Ray.
Well, I think what I would say is that apologizing and most importantly, what affects me the most is when I see Americans responding in a way that says, these aren't Afghanistan's. These are, you know, these aren't people that live in Afghanistan. They're not people that that are enemies. They're human beings that we should treat as such. Mm-hmm. And I think connecting and saying, you know, it's unfortunate, we're very sorry, it's a tragedy. Accepting it as a tragedy as much as it would be if it had been Americans that had died is the most important part in terms of a civilian looking from the outside in. Because that makes me say, you know what, it's not enemy combatants that are dying, these are people. And while that may not help perhaps the impression that people have of that one Marine who acted out, it does.
So I think he was a soldier. This in this case,
but. Soldier. Okay, it was. Yeah, it was.
But it is. It is about the brand, and I mean, it's important that you say that. I mean, the Marines are a brand, and we see them as very strong, very straightforward. They have a very clear purpose. You know, there are not a lot of gray. There's not a lot of gray. It's a very black and white sort of
Absolutely.
Business. So. When something like this happens that seems somewhat disgraceful and that it disgraces your brand in a way, I think the best thing you can do is be authentic and be honest. And the Marines, by them just simply apologizing and also saying that they feel empathy for the people that were humiliated by this situation, anytime any of these things happen,
I think that's the best you can do. And
yeah, I think we've done a great job at integrating the social once we come out with the traditional statement. But what shocked me when the Marines did the urination video, I thought we were going to get attacked all over social. But we have these crazy brand ambassadors who have this voice now in social.
Yeah.
Family members, guys who've been out for 20 years, who there was more positive support for those four, which I thought they did. It was appalling what they did. I was escorting some media from Minneapolis and San Diego at the time, and they wrote a story on my reaction because I was so shocked. But the support was just ridiculous. I didn't, even as a Marine, understand why they would support something.
Well, and you're going to get that in your business. You know that. So
yeah, I know it.
I think that your reaction is the more authentic reaction, and it's the more human reaction. And I would own that as often as you can, because your job is hard enough, and it sounds like you did the right thing by letting the media know that you have a heart and you have respect for other human beings. That to me is all that you can do. I mean, you did the right thing. You did exactly the right thing.
Thanks.
And I absolutely think that you should change your title from a PAO to a transmedia specialist. Awesome tweet.
We have a lot of guys. I don't know if they'll all change your, because they don't all do. Yeah, they're not as cool as I am.
So. No, you should lead the charge, and I think you should be the director of transmedia.
Wow. Give him a couple years.
Wow. Why not?
Just give you a.
I gave you a promotion.
But I think if you all think you have your hands tied with, you know, approval processes and not being able to be open and authentic with your brand, I mean, just look at the military. Right. And I've gone to see a lot of people in different branches of the military speak about public information officers and people over the years. And man, I mean, if they can do it and they are doing it, then, I mean, there's really no excuse for the rest of us, right? Talk about the one area where we're not, you know, that's so secretive. But if they, you know, if you can be open and honest, why can't the rest of us?
I've been lucky who've had great bosses that trust me, going back to that comment that I'm awesome. I have friends that they can't say anything. They can't say anything, and it sucks, and I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
And I just prove myself and keep charging, and the boss ends up listening to me and letting me do what I want to do. So you got to build that trust in your organization first.
Did you tweet the social link to the social media policy from Midwest Marines?
I did, yes.
Okay. So if you guys go to the hashtag SX, not sex, SX Flubs, he tweeted a link to the Marines social media policy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, there's companies that have already stolen that, and it's free because everything we do is technically paid for by you anyway.
That's very cool.
And you guys can take it and use anything you want.
We paid for it.
That's right.
I'm just kidding. Thank you. No, thank you for tweeting that resource. I appreciate it.
Does anyone else have any questions? You can just raise your hand if you do.
I think your husband tweeted one.
Oh. Hope is... yeah.
Yeah, that's everyone.
Aaron.
My question that I just submitted to the hashtag, so don't worry, you didn't miss it, was about... So after, you know, an organization has responded to a flub, for instance, Papa John's, right, they responded and you guys all said they did that well and all that, but we're all still talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. And we're still pissed off that they're racist and, like... you know, all that kind of stuff. So after that response has gone on, you know, are they just supposed to wait and hope it goes away? Or do you continue to respond? Or how should a corporation react when a story, they've responded well and still it has legs?
Should I tell them my analogy about the Catholic Church and Mary Magdalene?
Yeah, oh my gosh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an age-old question, right? Because, you know, Mary Magdalene is still recovering from the Catholic Church calling her a whore. And they took it back, but it was too late. So I think that, you know, it's just human nature. And I think it's very... Thank you, I got one laugh.
Thank you, John.
I'm here all night. I don't know. I mean, it's very situational, I think.
I think so, too. We debated this yesterday, I think, because I think we all have some slightly different views on that. In my opinion, like with Papa John's, it's a horrible thing that happened. I'm not going to belittle that in any sense, but I truly believe that there are bigger issues out there. So I think, like with the case with Papa John's, I mean, we're talking about it here today because it's a good case study. But I don't think on the streets people are talking about it anymore. Now, that being said, should it happen again with Papa John's, I think they're going to get hit hard. But I think for right now, it was just kind of a slap in the face, and they've moved on. Komen is a totally different story.
Well, that's going to evolve. You
know? All right. Yeah. So
I think there's a magnitude level here. If I was Papa John's, I wouldn't be talking about it anymore. I'd want to sweep it under the carpet and move on.
All right. So real quick, since it's about 6 o'clock, give me your one closing reminder in 140 characters or less.
Oh, sheesh.
I'll go first.
I can do it.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay. Just remember what your mom said. Be honest and change your underwear every day.
Oh, my mom said never wear underwear with holes. Just in case you had to go to the emergency.
That's more than the analogy is. Don't have a PR plan with holes. Fine.
Yeah. My advice is to listen, to be your company's spy. So you should always be monitoring your social media channels.
Be your company's spy?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
All right, Luann.
I say respect your social channels like you respect your traditional marketing and PR channels.
Good.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much
for
being here.
Thank you so much. If you didn't get a cookie and there's any left, please eat.
There's cookies over there that you are welcome to.